Hello, my name is Bill Cummings. Welcome to a new podcast, In the Spotlight. And this is a series of podcasts where I'm going to be talking to some very interesting people and getting to know them and their work a bit better. Yeah. And today, on my debut episode, I've got Simon and Julia from The Indelicates.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
We're all right. We're a bit cold.
I've lost control of my body clock. So I keep being asleep at random times. I don't know what happened. But beyond that,
this is basically Simon's morning. He's fine. But it's
I hear you. I hear you. It's weird, isn't it, when the clocks, yeah, they mess around with the clocks. And
it just seemed to break me this year. Something about it, the clocks changed, which is, and with little children, it's like often that doesn't make any difference because they just get up at the same time anyway. But then for something about it, it's just completely knocked me off centre and I've just been just sort of falling asleep at random times and having to get everything done in the middle of the night. And then, yes, it's all been really weird. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what day it is. What day is it?
It's Tuesday.
Oh, not Tuesday.
Yeah, welcome to my world. That's kind of my world as well. So you got in touch about your new album.
I did.
I suppose I could ask you some questions about it, but I mean, how would you describe it?
Okay, so it's taken us ages. I mean, that's the main thing about this album. It's taken like the length of an entire first Trump presidency and then most of a Biden one. We wanted to write something about QAnon because in 2018, I think it was. Yeah, so in 2018, I thought something just popped into my head, the musical Avenue Q, and QAnon was kind of kicking off, and I thought, that's funny. And I went on Twitter and put Avenue QAnon, and that was my tweet. And it was, I thought that was a good tweet. And it just kind of stuck in my head as something that would be a good idea for a concept album. So I've literally just been thinking about it ever since, and kind of it's throughout the whole pandemic and everything, as the world has gone increasingly mad. And I thought it was going to be super relevant, and then it sort of stopped being relevant for a while, and then we released the album, and now it's really super, super relevant again. And it's just kind of a, what is it? It's an album about the QAnon conspiracy theory, basically, and it, from lots of different angles of people who've fallen down that rabbit hole and ended up in the situation where they are believing this stuff. And I always find that really, really interesting, because the thing about QAnon is that it's completely insane and no one could reasonably believe it, but that doesn't seem to matter at all. Like, the more outlandish and crazy the claims are, the more people seem to want to believe it. So something about that seems to explain the situation we're in the world now, where there's this kind of growing adherence to populism and people getting into voting for all kinds of terrible weird freaks. And it's like, why on earth, what is it about this idea, this completely impossible idea that makes no sense at all, that makes people kind of fall for it anyway? So we sort of started off trying to write something that was a bit satirical and mean, but it ended up just being quite sad, because you think about what it is that makes a person believe something on purpose that they know isn't true. And the answer to that is that it's probably because they're kind of getting old and because they're kind of ill, and I'm old and kind of ill, and I just kind of, it all started to make sense in a way. So that's basically where it's ended up being. And then kind of came out September, October, like in a long kind of pre-order period, thinking, oh, this is a historical curiosity that will not be of much interest beyond as a sort of like companion piece to recent history. But of course, we're all going to be in an era of people have got over this now, and it's not going to be a problem. And then Trump's been reelected, and you kind of go, right, it's actually more relevant than I thought it was. And it's a bit alarming. That's the situation we currently find ourselves in.
Yeah, we have merchandise that is, that would be sort of a funny curiosity had he not won. And now it's
a lot edgier than
it's just a lot edgier than we were expecting it to be.
And at first that happened, and it was like he got elected, and we were like, "Oh, this feels really weird and wrong." Because it's like we're making hay out of actual devastating events in history, rather than reminiscing fondly about. But then at the same time, if you were, I'm not making the claim that we've written like Cabaret or anything, but like if you were in the problem with something like Cabaret or like great works about the rise of the Nazis is that they were all written after the Nazis when they couldn't help at all. And I'm not saying that our album's going to help at all, but at least we got it in before. So it's like Tomorrow Belongs to Me is all very well writing that in the 50s, but you want to try and write that in the 30s if at all possible. Yeah. But it's quite an exposing thing to do, because it's like, oh man, if people get cross about this, they're going to get cross in a whole different way than we thought they would have done. So
yeah. it's going to be even more relevant, isn't it? And you'd go into the different parts of it. Also, I was going to mention the song Little Bobby as well when you were talking about that, because that kind of deals with it almost from like a character perspective, isn't it? How somebody, what you were talking about in terms of how somebody can fall down that rabbit hole or...
Yeah, I would. And there's a specifically, there is actually in current psychological literature, there is a thing called rabbit hole syndrome. It's just a described mental disorder now. And it is that idea that you trip, something trips you up. And what's always interesting about, and we did an album years ago about David Koresh and Waco Siege and all that stuff. And what was always interesting about that to me was that you kind of, this stereotype of like slack-jawed Cletus from The Simpsons sort of thing, is not remotely true. They're like Harvard educated, multiracial, very bright, engaged people who get into cults. It's not like credulous idiots, right? So it's the same thing with QAnon. You keep turning up these people who are like successful, you know, well-read, educated people like Roseanne Barr, you know, who like have got everything to lose, fall into this sort of insanity, and it ends up ruining their lives, and it becomes everyone else's fault. But it is that. So the Little Bobby character is kind of an amalgam of various people, some of whom I know, but that you sort of started seeing during the pandemic. People would be like, they just start posting things, and you'd be like, that's quite far. why have you fallen and believed that? But then I was thinking about people like Paul Joseph Watson and these sort of like these kind of fairly ordinary British idiots who've like gone on to this global fame and become these hugely important historical figures, and that weird irony of like, people who in any other period of history would have just been like the absolute most marginalized people in the world, but suddenly have become like really key figures in history, kind of like Hamilton, but it's all about like the weirdest person on your estate, you know?
Yeah, and the internet obviously is a huge part of that, isn't it? And I was thinking about that a bit with the re-election of Trump as well, in terms of a whole right wing ecosystem of, or conspiracy theory ecosystem of YouTube, own social networks, the mainstream media can't understand even, let alone be part of.
So, I mean, yeah, that's completely right. And it's these like levels of, I mean, what was really interesting about QAnon is that it started as a LARP, basically. It was on 4chan, and it was at the time, you know, the way, so 4chan, the way it worked is like people would post often, and although everyone's anonymous, if you could sort of recognize the person, they'd get like a nickname, and usually that was e-girls. So you get someone like Cracky Chan, who was just a girl who had red makeup on her nose, and everyone thought she looked like she was on crack, so she was Cracky Chan. And that was like, that was the way that site worked. And then people started LARPing as these members of the US intelligence community. So someone would come on and go, I know the truth about Mega Upload, I know what's going on there. And then so that person would be Mega Anon, and there was someone who claimed to be in the FBI who was FBI Anon. And then there was someone who came along and said, I've got Q clearance and I know all this stuff about Trump. And so the nicknaming convention of 4chan was that he was QAnon. But the point of that was that on 4chan, everyone knew it was a joke. Everyone knew that this was just something that happened. People would come on and do these sort of ridiculous pretending to be members of the intelligence community. And so no one was taking it seriously, but they were posting as if it was serious. And so when it then breaks out of 4chan and people like boomers on Facebook see it, and also quite painfully being 45, like people of my generation start seeing it, but out of touch people who've no idea what's going on, suddenly they're taking 4chan literally, which is not how you're supposed to read 4chan. It's like, so suddenly all these things they've come out of one echo chamber where everyone's in on this kind of multi-layered in joke into another echo chamber where no one's in on that joke, but everyone's taking it super seriously. And suddenly all these 4chan jokes, people are behaving as if those are real life and really happening. And then you suddenly get like all these people my age and older, like Generation X moms, marching on Washington to try and overthrow the government based on the theory that there's child, that pizza is code for child porn in a basement that doesn't exist, and like all this mad stuff. But it's this sort of weird churn of like the furthest extremes of young men on the internet getting ported over unironically to the most mom bits of the internet you can get. It's a very, very weird thing that happened, but well understood.
It's a weird alliance, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, you the last people you'd expect to be an alliance in the end was like 4chan's sort of right radicalized post Gamergate anonymous community and your mum. Like, there it is.
Yeah, there's kind of that dichotomy, isn't there, that the left or whenever Biden got in or has become the elite. And it's kind of, you know, so there's this weird, we're taking it to the elites. But I did think about it in terms of the re-election of Trump, because now you said it's gone overground, a lot of those conspiracy theories, and a lot of those people who were the big figures in it, or they're very close to power or in power in the case of RFK Jr., you know. So I wonder how it's going to affect the kind of following there, or how is it going to, because they've become the elite. Does it just, does the following just carry on? Or does it just believe that it's delusion?
It's so hard to know, because someone like RFK Jr. says he's going to take all the fluoride out of the water based on this sort of... I mean, that's the conspiracy theory in, like, Dr. Strangelove. It's been for so long, nutters think that the fluoride is killing them. And yeah, that if he actually does it, everyone's teeth is going to fall out. I mean, it's like there's going to have to be some... At some point, people are going to have to go, hang on, this hasn't worked. Yeah. But maybe not. And I suppose that, because if you are... To be very classically left-right about it, if you want the working class to vote against their own interests, you have to give them some reason. And conspiracy theory is quite a good reason. So there is, there's reasons for people to adopt that cynically on the basis that there's votes in it. But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's, like, now we're in a situation where they're going to have to, there's no opposition. They control everything. They're going to have to do some stuff based on what they claim they believe. And I'm fairly sure it's going to be fairly disastrous for people. So what's going to happen? I mean, it's like...
Suppose what they tend to do then is blame the institutions then, don't they? We can't do that. You saw a bit in this country with the Brexit wing, or, you know, Tufton Street wing of Tories. It's like, you know, all the civil services trying to stop us from, you know, embracing our freedoms. So I suppose that's where Project 2025 comes in, doesn't it? Like, get rid of all of that.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, because if they do, okay... So what happens now? Who's going to run everything? And
what happens to society?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting times, as the Chinese proverb possibly doesn't say. Is that a real Chinese proverb?
I don't know.
May you live in interesting times. I don't know. I'm told that's a Chinese proverb, but then you used to believe that Tiki Tiki Tembo was a real Chinese folk story, didn't you?
I did. Have you ever heard of that story?
No.
It's a story called Tiki Tiki Tembo No Sal Rembo, and it's about. It's just incredibly racist, but, like, it's a children's story about how the first child is called Tiki Tiki Tembo No Sal Rembo Charibari Ruchi Pipperi Pembo, and the second child is called
Chang,
right? And one of them falls down a well, and because he falls down a well and his name is so long, it takes ages to get him out, right? And that's why in China they stopped calling the children with, like, really long names. But it's all made up. Like, it's all pretend.
You believed this your whole life until you had children and tried to read it to them.
I read this book to my children.
Hang on a minute. This is amazing.
This isn't true. Like, no one has this really long name in China. This is absurd. But, yeah, it's a difficult one. My mum keeps getting in touch with me and talking about woke, because she's German. And she thinks that woke is called woke, right? And she reads it in German on the internet, on Facebook, right? And she's like, yeah, this is all the woke nonsense, right? And she's going to vote for AfD, like, she's going to vote for the right-wing people in Germany. But, like, really with no knowledge or information at all, she's just doing it because she's in her late 60s and she thinks that everyone in my generation is bad and wrong and needs correcting in some way. And so that's why she's doing it. She has no other reason for doing it.
Even though it's, like, about serious topics, like, I suppose it's different because you wrote it at a time when you thought, like you said, it could be held up to ridicule in the future. But there is a kind of nightmarish absurdity about some of the lyrics and some of the way you approach it, I suppose. And, like, a bit like you said, like almost satirical Broadway show or musical or something.
When the pandemic happened, we were right in the middle of doing our show Paradise Rocks, which is a piece of musical theatre about Elvis in Hawaii. But it's like Paradise Lost, so Milton's Paradise Lost set in Hawaii. It's really, really good. And we had loads of momentum. And then, of course, the pandemic happened and it completely floored us. Like, we had to stop doing everything. So we were quite in the midst of sort of musical theatre when we decided to go back to this. And that's you definitely hear it in the music a bit.
I think the first track is super musical theatre-y.
Yeah.
In that, I kind of think because people knew we were doing that stuff, I kind of wanted the first track to be like what you'd expect from the album.
Yeah.
And then it, because, you know, because I think, you know, you say it's called Avenue QAnon. Obviously, that's a pun. So it kind of sets it up as, you know, like you're just trying to be funny. Yeah. And I sort of thought, well, let's get all of that out of the way in the first track, and then we can get onto the what I'm actually feeling like, which is sort of sad and old. Mm. I mean, that was the other thing with the pandemic. It's like, because it was when that pandemic started, we had these shows booked in for this show, in which I'd written the show, but like I was playing the main part in it. So I was sort of, I mean, it was like, what, 40, but like acting the part of like a 20-year-old rebellious rock and roll star. And before the pandemic, that didn't seem ludicrous. And after the pandemic, it was like, yeah, that's ridiculous. There's absolutely no way I can do that. So, but that was a weird change. Like that year of being locked in was kind of like the year that I would have grown up and matured and become middle-aged and sort of just emerged blinking middle-aged with like heart palpitations, looking at the world going, what has happened to everything? I don't understand anything anymore. I can no longer play the part of the 20-year-old rock and roll star. And so we had to sort of recast it and just sort of sit on stage and feel old and like that. So that all went into it, because it was just like, you know, this is, you sort of start going, well, I think it's like you kind of go, well, if this is reality, I'll believe anything else because it would be better. So I'll just choose what I believe, because if I believe the truth, it's all looking quite bleak from here on in. So we might as well. So it kind of got to that, and then you get that thing of just sort of, I suppose what that album really does is like it's over and over again this moment of just suddenly looking around and like realizing the situation you've got yourself into, and it's too late to do anything. Like you've alienated your family and you're standing on the streets of DC holding a tiki torch or a gun or something, storming the Capitol. And like, you just sort of, you know, it's all been so fun up until that point. And it's all been like, yeah, we're bakers. We're taking down the cabal. We're going to hunt Tom Hanks. He's a paedophile and all this stuff.
Yeah.
To be clear for the podcast listeners, Tom Hanks is not a paedophile. I'm not saying that. Some many people have said that, which is a very weird little offshoot. They all think Tom Hanks is to blame for everything. But like, it's all fun until you're suddenly standing there, like the guy who burst into the Comet Ping Pong pizza restaurant with a AK-47 or whatever it was, some kind of assault rifle, because he thought they were literally holding children in the basement to harvest adrenochrome for Hillary Clinton.
He was completely convinced that.
And he was like, he wouldn't leave until they'd shown him the basement. And they're like, we don't have a basement. Like, this is insane. And eventually he just sort of went, oh, okay, and handed himself in, because it was like, it just all came crashing down. It was like, oh, this is nonsense. But it's like, how people see how far they can push it, and then suddenly you can't push it any further and you've accidentally trashed your democracy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a...
You saw it with the insurrection as well. And the...
Right. Well, I mean, that was the main, I mean, because there's actually a 12th song that we cut, because it was quite, it went as like, it was like a bonus track in the end, because it was quite similar in theme to one of the ones that was in there. And it was the worst of the two, but it was specifically about Ashley Babbitt, the woman who died.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just sort of see this life and she just looks so sort of happy in her hat, running around with all her friends that she's met off the internet, having like the best day of her life. And then suddenly you've actually pushed it to the point where they have to shoot you to stop you from breaking into the Capitol building. It's just what an insanely stupid way to die. Like, it's just, it's like, it's almost unbearable how pathetic the bathos of it. It's like, it's just like, you the more you think about it, the more you're just like, God, that's so, it's like you cringe to death. It's like, it's awful. It's
going to be quite a leap now. There's an idea of, you know, there's a sense of belonging, isn't it? You know, especially when you find a group, there's like, you know, this sense of belonging that you especially in music, you know, that was my escape. Yeah. And especially like early message board culture. And now it happens on Twitter where you find, you know, similar interests. But yeah, for the individual, it might feel like, you know, we're having great fun here, communality, you know, we all agree on this kind of thing. And, you know, we're going on these marches and everything. And then suddenly it gets very dark, and suddenly the reality of it just, you know, like you said, punctures it.
Yeah, and it almost doesn't matter what it is. It's like, I mean, like, so Fred Brennan, the guy who founded 8chan, there's a song about him on the record, because he did all this stuff when he was a teenager. Like, he was really good at coding, and he's very disabled, and he has some osteogenesis imperfecta, so he's you know, wheelchair user, and he coded all these Chan sites and coded 8chan and ended up inviting Gamergate to it and then inviting Q to it. So Q moved from 4chan to 8chan, So he's kind of had this huge, terrifying, devastating effect on the world all before he was 18, and then sort of became a grown-up, was like, oh no, this is really bad, and has ever since then has dedicated his life to trying to shut it down and tell everyone who Q really is and stuff. But I mean, he was in, before he did that, he was on a board called Wizard Chan, and that was based on the meme that if you make it to the age of 30 without losing your virginity, you become a wizard, right? So inherently not true, but it was the case that like they took that so seriously that if you did lose your virginity, you were not allowed to post on Wizard Chan anymore. You had to resign. And he was the admin of the site. So he bought the site with proceeds he'd made working as a teenager on Fiverr-style projects. And he was the admin of the site, and he had to sell it and resign because he lost his virginity. Like, he took that seriously. But again, it's like, it doesn't matter what the community is. That community was based around being adult virgins. That was all they talked about. And so
there's a lot of religious connotations to that.
Absolutely. I mean, but it's just that, to take it that seriously, they go, it's like it starts off as like, no, we're just finding a community where we can. And then it ends up being, you have to sort of publicly defenestrate yourself.
Yeah.
If you break the core principle, which in that case was sex with a woman.
Well, yeah, I'm a lapsed Catholic, so I get that one. But there's also, through the record, a lot of nods to different songs and different bits of music and stuff, which I thought was quite cool. Like, obviously, most obviously on 4chan, the chain, Fleetwood Mac. Because a lot of hip-hop records do that, don't they? The best hip-hop records, anyway. But they kind of nod at things. Not like it still sounds affectionate, even though you're doing it in a kind of slightly satirical way.
That one, it was like, I think it was because the second half of that song, the idea was basically, it's like Tusk, but it's a war, was the kind of idea. And then I was worried that that wouldn't be obvious enough.
Yeah,
that we were directly ripping off Tusk, because we clearly are. But like, I think a lot of people don't listen to Tusk as much as Rumours. Mm. But there's the whole thing, because they have like Tusk has like, they have the crowd noise in the background, and they have like a full battery of the marching drum band. So yeah. I wanted to do that, but like instead of crowd noise, have it be like a war, because the idea with that song is that it's supposed to be about the way that 4chan blends into boomer culture and Facebook. So it's like 4chan to Facebook, so I wanted to start with like 4chan and end with like the most Facebooky boomer acceptable band you could imagine, which is probably Fleetwood Mac. I love Fleetwood Mac. That's what it is. And so I thought, well, that's not really obvious enough. And then we couldn't find a way of getting from the main start to the end, and then just sort of thought, oh, the chain sort of fits. Let's just sort of sing the chain.
Yeah.
And then and then you think, oh well, chain chan, that's a good joke.
Yeah, sort of, yeah, good just sort of
like, but and I suppose the idea was that like it's hard to almost every lyric is really easy. I've got like, I've written like 20,000 words of footnotes for the lyric book, so it's all very explicable. But this is like that bit, it just was a vibe thing. It's kind of, it suited it, and it did the job of like going, right, when we're out of like the esoteric world of 4chan and into the boomer world of Fleetwood Mac now. And so it kind of worked. So yeah, it felt right to do that. And it's like you say, it's like quotations. Like, I like the idea of musical quotation because I mean, Fleetwood Mac are interesting because there's Fleetwood Mac are all over this record, because I think the whole idea of some of the songs is just like, I want it to sound like Fleetwood Mac. That was kind of the like live, laugh, love towards the end. Is like, I just want this to sound like Fleetwood Mac as much as possible. And then,
although weirdly with that one, I was getting 1975 bit as well. I don't know why. Because it had a bit of like a pop, a modern pop thing to it as well, I thought.
I suppose with live, love, it's more like the blend of like, there's kind of a Julia doing a low voice and a high harmony, and then I'm doing the kind of high harmony, not the low one. So it's kind of that particular blend of, anyway, the other thing with Fleetwood Mac is like MGTOW, the Men Going Their Own Way movement, which is a major part of the manosphere, is kind of, obviously their name basically comes from You Can Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac. And then there's that kind of, because they do that because it's the Formula One music, so there's like there's that sort of whole Jeremy Clarkson-y, denim-y feel to Fleetwood Mac that was really important to bring into it. So I just wanted to have as many Fleetwood Mac things as possible.
They're always on those albums, like 100 driving songs or whatever, as well.
100%. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got one of those somewhere, I'm sure.
But, like you said, they did some great records. So, I really like Cold War Bop as well. I think I put on Twitter. It just reminds me, it's like a apocalyptic boogie, like jiving at the end of the world or something.
Yeah,
because there's like, you touch on sort of nostalgia industry and kind of elements of like Cold War, history and like post-truth and stuff like that as well. I think it's really good, and it's just a fun song as well, even though, like you said, it's got that kind of sadness to it as well.
Maybe. I mean, that's probably the one that's most sort of just about myself, isn't it? I mean, the other thing is we wanted it to sound like Eine Neue Schwier.
Yeah, so there's a radio station in Berlin called Berliner Rundfunk 91.4, which is, Berliner Rundfunk 91.4.
Yeah, my favourite radio station.
And it plays, when we were there recording Songs for Swinging Lovers, which is our second album, in 2009 and 2010, we had a really good time. We recorded it in the Funkhaus Berlin, which was an old DDR radio built. And we used to drive there in our car, and we used to listen to Berliner Rundfunk 91.4, and they used to only play music before like 1990.
And only the goodest music on the radio. And it's all just lots of do you know the band Wishful Thinking?
I don't.
They were a British band.
Honestly, look them up. It is the funniest thing you've not heard. It is. It will make your eyebrows rise.
They did a song about Hiroshima. Yeah. Okay. Hiroshima, but it's like the most we are taking this extremely seriously. Yeah. It's an amazing record. But all the records like that, and it was kind of they had a quiz because their slogan was "Gute Zeiten, gute Musik," good times, good music. But you have to phone in and say a good time that you've had, and then your favorite music, and then they'd play it. It was that kind of radio station.
Yeah,
and I tried to write something that would fit on there.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the local radio stations in southern counties or southern FM in Brighton used to have that kind of vibe. Like people would phone up and like say, this is from a girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they would say, we enjoy being by the beach listening to this. And then they would play that song. It's the same sort of vibe as that.
Only with a very strict nothing after 1990.
And also really, really like post-war stuff, you know, it's like everything, like it was all like Western stuff, but not after 1990, because that's what they really aspired to having, because they were from the East. So kind of, it was a really interesting sort of vibe.
And when you drive through kind of East Berlin, listening to, like, it would feel like being in East Berlin, listening to sort of smuggled in Opus records, you know, just like going, the dreaming of the Western life where live is life.
Yeah.
And that kind of vibe is a really strong feeling. Yeah. I love that feeling of just driving through the DDR, listening to sort of Western radio friendly rock music. I was trying to aim for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear that. And I notice in some of your videos and some of your promotional material, covers and stuff, have you used AI?
Yeah, tons.
Yeah. I just wondered if there's a kind of, almost in using AI, is there kind of an irony in that as well? Because, you know, it's part of our post-truth, isn't it? Our post, I don't know.
A lot of people don't like AI, and I understand.
Yeah, I got a mixed feelings on it. But, you know, it's like any technology, isn't it? It's like...
In this case, I can see why just about someone would... I mean, I don't really agree. I am quite pro-AI. I think it's... Yeah. I've always been anti-copyright anyway. I mean, I'm quite... And so I'm kind of this idea that you, make your little things and then you hold on to them preciously and they're mine. Yeah, I always found that quite a mean-spirited, petty way to look at the world. But I can understand why someone would be like, you've just mimicked the style of an existing artist and now you're commercially appropriating it. And I can see why you'd be pissed off. But in this case, it's like, it's an album about some extent. So in order to, there's no other way to illustrate that other than by confecting my own history. And I don't think that the things we've used AI for could be done in any other way. I don't think there's a way of there isn't an existing process that lets me kind of put my face onto what's his name?
Hasselhoff.
There's no way of sticking my face on Hasselhoff at the Berlin Wall without using AI. So I'm sorry, I have to do it because that's the art I intend to make and there's just no stopping me.
I think the other thing to bear in mind, there's a little caveat really, is that actually Simon had to do an enormous amount of work to the AI to make it how he wanted it. So he spent months on it. He didn't just sort of put in, I want this, into an AI.
Yeah, I've not been prompting on Midjourney. I've been training my own models.
He's done a mad amount of work to make it actually what he wanted, which is very different, I think.
We have had an email from someone. We did, I mean, a couple of emails from people going I see, the worst written thing you could imagine. It's like, they did this little story of there I was sitting in my basement thinking, a new music from the Indelicates. This will be interesting. But then I saw it. You are using AI.
I kind of think it fits with it, you know, it fits with the whole theme of it, doesn't it? Post-truth, post-history, you know, AI does sort of fit into that.
I suppose I always feel a little bit like the problem with this stuff is that when a new technology, because I was a photographer for a long time, I still am.
I was going to ask you about your project.
Yeah, And I remember Photoshop at college in 1998 and everyone being completely freaked out about how this was going to completely destroy how you took pictures and stuff. And then all of those people became graphic designers. And I know them now. I know all their children. They're all graphic designers. And they're all freaking out about AI now. And I'm kind of like, it feels to me
because
like...
Because we have children too. Not, she's not like no, a no, child
no.
catcher.
I'm not like a child catcher. I was like, ha-ha. So I know a lot of the dads and they're like, you know, they're all in graphic design. They all learn Photoshop in 1998, just like I did. And they're all freaking out about it. And I'm kind of like, I suppose I sort of feel like the most realistic way to think about it is that you are not necessarily in control of how technology rises, but you can adapt it for use by humans. So a better strategy with AI would be to try and make it as human as possible. If you want to make it work for you, that might be a good way to kind of work with it rather than being just anti it, because I don't think you'll stop that kind of progress. It just carries on. In the same way, maybe having a few people in Trump's administration that are like, you know, just jobbing people who just job and get on with it, sorting stuff out, might be quite a wise thing.
He doesn't seem to be doing that though. He seems to be picking the most insane things.
No, I think probably what should happen is some people who can persuade him to join the cabinet should persuade him, and then they'll do the job like they sort of did last time.
It's not like last time though, because now he's got like someone who's... He's an anti-vaxxer, he's in charge of health. Basically a confirmed Russian asset in charge of spies. I mean, it's and then obviously, while we were waiting to rejoin the Zoom call, I've just seen that Shewaddy Waddy are looking for a new singer guitarist. So I'm going to ditch all this mad QAnon stuff. I'm going to be in Shewaddy Waddy instead.
This sounds fun. I'd like to do this. £300 per show plus hotels and expenses.
Ooh, I know, right? That's five plus shows a year, mainly weekend dates.
Weekend dates, easy peasy.
Well, I suppose it could be looking for a girl. You can't really play the guitar. I can't
play the guitar.
Can you play the guitar well enough for Shewaddy
Waddy? I don't know. It's possible.
Tempting advert I've ever seen.
People in our bands have joined like covers bands instead because it's so much more. They go on like cruise ships and stuff and earn money.
No, we're like the Fool now. We've got so many ex-members.
Yeah, we do. They are all doing great. It's fine. We're doing fine. Simon.
Is it just like, as long as it's you two and your nan on bongos, then it's the Indelicates, is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah, though Benny, our drummer, has been our drummer for a long time now. They've been here for a good while. So
Benny can also sing and do additional things and has also been in our theatre performances, so that kind of helps too.
I think Benny has earned the right to be an official part. Of the Indelicates.
100%.
It's been over a decade, let's be fair.
But
over on the right there is a constant churn.
Yeah, at the moment we have a nice man called Reese, who's from Wales too, on bass, who's very nice. He's a good friend of my friend Harley, who's also from Wales.
Well, Harley's in the band too now because she plays a drum in 4chan.
She does play the drum in 4chan, yeah. She's lovely, Harley.
I wanted to get a full battery, like in Tusk, of like 50 people, but we settled on just our friend Harley, who is yet to wear an interesting little majorette
cheerleading outfit or something.
I think at some point we should buy her a majorette uniform. Anyway, sorry, we've been off into a reverie. It's like, we should put her in a little cap.
I've got a mate, he does, he's in a Adamant tribute, I think they're called Ant Music.
Awesome,
does quite well out of it, and he's in an actual band as well, and obviously much more lucrative. That's the sad thing about nostalgia, isn't it?
People will pay for like a wedding or something, like they'll pay a bunch just to have you play something they actually want, like they're not, they don't want to, like, you know, they don't necessarily want to, like,
what tribute band would we do?
If we do a flute, we could do the Mac.
We can't do the Mac. You can't be, we'd need someone reading well.
I don't know. I mean, I could probably do quite a few different things.
And we do a good Dead Ringer for Love at karaoke.
Yeah, we do. We could probably do like Paradise by the Dashboard Light or something like.
Definitely do Paradise.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
Though it's quite tiring and I might die.
We're quite good at doing country covers, me and Simon. Like, we're surprisingly good at it.
That's right. Yeah, with Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn. That's our covers.
Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn. We're surprisingly good at it. Like, whenever we do it, we're like, we should do this. It's a make loads of money. And we're rich. Anyway.
Play the barn dance. Dance circuit.
Do a little line dance. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When the Kayleys have stopped being fashionable, it'll be barn dances again. And then
probably not for 4 years or so.
No, maybe. Yeah. Everyone who has a wedding these days has a Kaylee because Kayleys are fashionable at the moment.
Is that still true?
Yeah, it's still fashionable. Yeah.
I've not been to a wedding.
Round in Lewis, where we are, which is very much white middle class, of a certain level of wealth. It's Kaylee's every it. Wedding. Yeah, Simon doesn't like it very much. I've made my peace with it, but.
Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, yeah, I was going to ask you about your the amount of formats you've got of your album, and your because you also do like fan funding, don't you? And but I did find it quite amusing because I did feel like some of them like the £4,000 edition I did think was quite funny. But
price targeting, what you want to do is you want to put one that's ridiculously too expensive so that people think the expensive middle ones are cheaper.
Yeah,
that's how they do it in the supermarket.
That's but right.
I did wonder if it was a Taylor Swift kind of slight. No, you know,
it's just funny. I mean, I think because we were doing this thing. We were doing this for such a long time that we've been doing this probably from 2009, I think, was the first time we tried to do it, and and it's got, and I remember back then it was kind of, no one was really, and now it's like, this is like the standard way to release albums. So it kind of feels like we have to push it further each time to get more stupid, see what we can come up with. I think we did one in this one where it was like, I think it was like 50 grand, but that will delete the album forever and then we'll support whichever political party you want, like a Russian deep state money edition. And I was like the financial dominatrix edition where like you just pay us and then we give you the worst thing we've got and tell you you're a twat. But we did once, because like normally we don't sell the sort of ridiculous ones, but like we did sell one with the fifth album. I did one where it was like the Norwegian black metal edition where we would just re-record all the vocals go rah, rah, rah. And someone did buy that.
Someone we had to re-record the whole album in metal style. Which and it's hurts. Not on the internet.
Those guys are pros, because that was really painful.
It was really hard, especially for me. I'm quite good. I'm not good at, like, you know, dark metal singing. I can't do that.
No, you're not. But you did it anyway. Right.
I had to try.
And I thought they'd probably sort of like stick that on the internet, but they haven't. They've just kept that to themselves.
So, personal use.
Well, apparently so.
Yeah. So, maybe they had a wedding and that's what they wanted.
I'm signed up to various Patreons as well. And like a lot of the artists, I'll have like a ridiculous tier as well. You know what I mean? In case there's somebody who wants, I don't know, full back catalogue. A message and a chat, and yeah, it's quite exhausting, isn't it? All this content creation, you know, it can be quite a full-time job, doesn't it? I mean
on the serious side of it, it's like I think there's a weird thing in the economics of making music, in that people complain about how little you get paid, and it is really irritating, especially when it's Spotify, because so much of that money has gone to Joe Rogan to promote Trump on his podcast. So that sort of stings a little bit, because it's just like some tiny drop in the ocean fraction of that money is like value I created, and I don't like it. It's really unpleasant feeling. But there is this sort of sense, this true fact, that there is way more music than there is a market for music. So just by the basic rules of supply and demand, anything that, if you're making music, it isn't worth anything as a digital product. It actually has a value of zero in the market, because there's so much other music that you could be listening to. So you kind of, I don't know, one way around that is Patreon. The way I prefer to have gone about it is to sort of think, well, you have to find a scarce product somehow. You have to make something worth buying. And so, you know, if it can be like special editions and as creative as possible, then that at least is something that people want, that isn't just a saturated market full of many, many choices. So I'm not really interested in this attempting to sell albums for like $6.99 on Bandcamp thing. Like that seems like an impossible market. It's got to be either free on streaming, which is what it basically is, or something expensive and really worth owning. Like those seem to be the two possibilities. So I think we kind of have leaned into that a lot. So it's kind of like, no, if you buy a special edition from us, it's going to take a little while, but it's going to be worth having. And I have, as I say, written 20,000 words worth of footnotes for the lyric book, because, like, you know, I'm charging quite a lot for them, so it's got to be worth having.
That's like a book in itself. That is a book, isn't it? 20,000 words.
I didn't expect it to be quite so many, but then I was like, well, actually, there's a lot of I've referred to a lot of stuff in that album that isn't that well known. So that people really need to have it explained why Julia would have a Sharpie in her asshole. But you know, because there's a reason why I put that in. It's from a 4chan meme, and like,
I appreciate
to explain
you
all that.
Explaining it, Simon. It's not just Julia being Julia, which is, to be fair, I would understand. It's okay.
No, but... as far as I know, she's not done that. But, you know, who knows?
Oh,
she's a woman of depth. Not like that. That's worse, isn't it? I've made that a lot worse.
I was going to ask you about your, Julia, I was going to ask you about your, doing a project, aren't you, called The Poem? Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
It's your first photography. I can't even say that word now.
One of them is a little poetry thing that I'm sort of working on behind the scenes. And then the other one is I've got two photographic projects. One of them is about my time working in care, which I did from 2005 until 2021, so right at the second wave of COVID. And I have loads of pictures in the care home that I worked in the various care homes that I worked in, which kind of span having worse phones and then better phones that can take better pictures. So it's really interesting. And I'm kind of writing a book about that, and which I'm going to make. Simon's going to make it look very pretty because Simon's very good at that. And I've got another project about AI that I've been working on too. I kind of stopped. I've always taken photographs, but I just kind of stopped doing it recently just because of time. But then I kind of thought it might be quite nice to do something with these pictures because I noticed that I just kind of looked at them again and I was like, huh, this is really interesting that we now take lots of pictures in our workspace because we have the capacity to take pictures in our workspace with our amazing phones. And that is quite cool because it means that we've got, you know, a record of the places we've been that are just sort of, you know, toilets and the cactuses and the weird chairs and all of that. But also I've got like a really interesting collection of pictures that kind of span the time of austerity as well. So there's like loads of empty care homes and like empty day centres and things like that, which they should be a good bunch of pictures. It's called Has Anyone Seen Julie? And the reason it's called that is because I used to hide in my cleaning cupboard and the toilets, and I used to book all of the Indelicates tours on my phone using the internet, right, on my now sophisticated internet phone. The staff would say, has anyone seen Julie? And obviously my name is not Julie, it's Julia, but they couldn't even be bothered to do the extra syllable. So I thought I'd call it that because it's kind of about my identity as Julia as well, but also a kind of funny joke about them not being able to find me because I was always hiding, doing something else on my phone instead of doing my job, which obviously was, you know, kind of a bit pointless and a bit silly anyway. So yes, that's what I've been doing.
It is funny with like a camera roll, isn't it? Because I was looking at mine the other day and it goes back to like 2018 or whatever, and it is like a diary, isn't it? It's like a visual diary. It is.
And I think that really only started like it really hadn't started in 2003. It kind of started around 2004, 2005. I had a Sony Ericsson that could just maybe do a bit of internet. And then I had like a Nokia that flipped up that could do the internet, could do emails. So I could email people in Germany and be like, can we come and play gigs? So I'd organize all these tours literally from a cleaning cupboard. I was sitting on like a carpet cleaner in a cupboard booking all these tours because I was, you know, I wanted to do something else but I needed money, and so I, you know, but it's so interesting because the technology kind of like massively improved, I think, in 2007, 2008. That's when the iPhone started to come out, and then the cameras got much better, so you get even better pictures and do even more internet. And I think at that point people did kind of start doing loads more technology on their phone at work, so in their workspace. And then of course, like years forward, you've got like COVID and everyone kind of being in a situation where they're kind of locked in with their phones again, and it's super interesting. Like it's gonna be super interesting to look back on, I think, just looking at your pictures from that time. And
I've had to cut down my screen time. It's just got ridiculous. So
really,
can affect your mental health, can't it? So if you're on your
definitely.
Like you're working on your phone as well. It's like, you were talking about. So.
I have the problem I've got is that I get very distracted by everything coming in on the same device.
Yes.
So I've started using an old phone and a new phone to try and kind of separate a reading phone and then a notification phone, because I just can't pay attention. And then I miss just days and days of emails and things because I'm too overwhelmed, you know.
I don't think the human brain can, this might be another album you could write, I don't think the human brain can compete with the internet and,
well, actually saying that, that's kind of what our album Elevator Music is about.
I remember that came
out in 2015, and it's kind of about the internet becoming sentient.
Did that have like a video with it as well? I think I watched something on your website regarding
did lots of VR stuff with that.
That's what I was thinking of.
So they had like, there was a song called Beyond the Radio Horizon, which is kind of set in VR, and you can kind of look around, I think, and stuff.
Ahead of its time. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
It's gone the way I hoped it would be. It's kind of become a bit niche, and
it has been
really taken over the world. So that stupid Apple thing that costs like $3,500, and you're just like, well, that's not what I'm for the future I was promised.
Yeah,
this.
I'm still very disappointed by Elon Musk. Yeah. He was like, you know, the great hope.
He's such a twat now.
It's just that, like, you know,
in all those pictures of Elon Musk jumping and trying to make an X with his body behind Trump, like the worst pictures of the century so far. Yeah. He's wearing a T-shirt that I bought Julia 10 years ago, which he has absolutely ruined.
But I was just like, if you're like representative of loads of future technologies that may really help people out, including my son who might not be able to drive a car because he's not got very good eyesight, right? Like, if you're representative of those things, like cars that can drive themselves and space travel to different planets. You can't behave this badly. This is really disappointing.
Really do all that stuff.
I know he didn't do it. He just bought those companies. But I kind of wish that those companies could like escape his you know, money now. That might be nice. Like, you know, because those are really important technologies and they're not like, they're not nothing. They are.
It's probably going to be some giant Enron style bankruptcy that he will now get pardoned for. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
It's two huge egos, isn't it, in a cabinet of many egos. Anyway, I was going to ask you about your solo album, Simon, slightly.
I'm just going to pop, if that's all right. So I'm going to give you space to cut.
Yeah, go on. Pylon Music, yes. Deer Park, and Mechanical Child. Well done. When have you been writing these, and when have they come out?
I feel ever so flattered. It's like someone remembering the names of my children.
I just got off the press release. Not that brilliant.
I know, but still, there you are. Just like have even reading that is more homework than a lot of people do. Yeah no, I did. I just, you know, you go mad in pandemics, don't you?
Yeah.
So we started worshipping pylons to give the children something to do at the weekends when we weren't allowed to do anything. And so one of the ways that we came up with handling that was to drive around trying to find good pylons and then making ambient music about them.
Yeah.
So they made a little album about that, which we've recently, there's someone's making a documentary about people who like pylons too much. And they came and spent a day with us filming up when we went and did a magical ritual around a pylon up on the downs, which at some point I'm going to see, presumably that will come out and that'll be embarrassing. I just quite like the idea of inventing a religion that everyone was agreed was a stupid idea.
It was super fun.
And then Arcadia Park, there's a lot to say about Arcadia Park that I will not fit, but just say that was during the NFT thing. And it was one of the more lucrative, stupid things I've done in my life. Let's put it that way. I invented an imaginary theme park while I was stuck indoors in the pandemic thinking. And I'm not the only person who's done that. Like our former bass player, Lawrence Owen, also has got released an album of imaginary theme park music. So, so it's like the calculus.
Yeah.
Only like a really stupid. But I love theme park music, so I thought I'd make an album of that. And what was the other one? The Mechanical Child. Yeah, that was when all the AI thing was happening. And we were just, the idea there was I wanted to have something that you could give to an AI to teach it about how to not kill everyone. So it was like, it was intended to be, as a kind of religious text to read to an AI to explain to it why it should be good. So that, but that was using lots of kind of AI generative elements. So again, I think people think you just type in prompts and get music, but it wasn't like that at all. I think it's much more like, I sort of see the most useful thing I've found AI for in music is using it as like, instead of looking through old records for samples, you kind of generate samples. So instead of finding the breakbeat in the, you know, funk record, you tell it to generate a breakbeat and then you treat that as you would the breakbeat from a funk record to rebuild new music out of. So it's kind of, because I think we've pretty much exhausted the funk records for their breakbeats now. So it was an interesting way of finding new ones. And the best thing about it is it's like, whereas all non-AI synthesis always has that kind of synth sound, which I love, but at the same time is different to kind of AI synthesis where everything sounds organic and not synthetic, but in a really uncanny way. So I thought that was my way of playing around with that. So yeah, that's a brief overview of my oeuvre. Yeah.
Have you got any shows coming up or anything?
We haven't at the moment.
We did
launch for the Avenue QAnon at Signature Brew in London. Nice. Which was great.
But we are a gigging concern. We don't need to list of old things that happen that people can't come to. Yeah. But we are a gigging concern again. So, I think there will be things, but I don't think
there will be things next year, definitely.
Yeah. Just keep an eye on your website. Is that where people go if they want to buy your
record? The thing that we've most found in this kind of, as Twitter falls to pieces and everyone's trying to find a place to talk, the thing we've used most is our Discord, weirdly. It's like that's been the thing that's been really brilliant. It's kind of felt like the forum we used to have in like 2006. Mm. And it's just been, you know, it's just been a really good place to hang out. So so that's by far the best way of being in touch with us and just seeing what we're doing is our Discord. But yes, indelicates.com, will always be updated. We're on Blue Sky now. We're on, presumably we're on Threads, though I don't really look at Threads.
Yeah, the Indelicates Instagram, obviously, as well. That's quite a good place.
But just indelicates.com, that's where things are.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you for talking to us.
You're welcome. Welcome. And good luck with everything. And I really enjoyed the album.
Yes.
Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for talking to us. This has been
In the Spotlight podcast, the pilot episode. And hopefully there'll be some more interviews to come. So until the next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.